The news of late about college students has been bad, even terrifying. The story of an isolated, mentally ill young man who went on a rampage in Blacksburg will haunt this Virginia campus for years to come. While this case was extreme, the concern about fostering connections between students and the outside world is common. At the University of California, San Diego, two professors addressed this need by teaching a class that featured contemporary social activists.
In the social sciences and humanities, where we're supposed to talk about social problems and problems that impact real communities, too often I think our production of knowledge is too abstract for what undergraduates especially are looking for. And so our goal was really to take that knowledge, to expose them to a little bit of theory, which is always important, but then to actually go and see how it works on the ground. How does this theory help or hinder people who are really involved in communities trying to make changes there so that everyone gets a fair shot at all of the resources that our society has to offer?
In one session of Mariscal's class, two immigrants from Iraq and Poland told of reducing domestic violence in their communities by spreading the word about immigrants' rights. And on this day, the students heard from Eric Mann, a traditional so-called 1960s-type activist, introduced here by Professor of Ethnic Studies David Pellow.
Eric Mann is the director of the Labor Community Strategy Center in Los Angeles. He has been a civil rights, anti-war, labor, and environmental justice organizer for 40 years, working with CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, the Bus Rider Union, and the UAW, the United Auto Workers. In 2001, he was a delegate to the United Nations World Conference Against Racism in Durban, South Africa, and returned to that nation a year later as part of a Strategy Center delegation to the World Summit on Sustainable Development in Johannesburg. He is co-host of the weekly radio show Voices from the Front Lines, which airs on KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. As director of the Labor Community Strategy Center, Eric Mann synthesizes public advocacy work around transportation, labor, and environmental issues with education, policy development, and artistic cultural production. Today, he will be speaking on Building the Left in the Age of the Right, Challenging Racism and Empire. So please join me in welcoming Eric Mann.
Thanks, Jay. Well, thanks, everybody. In terms of being a speaker, I think that a lot of you have not really heard a left-wing revolutionary speaker who comes out of the traditions of anti-racism and anti-imperialism. You've heard in your lifetime a highly ideological Karl Rove, a highly ideological George Bush. You've heard the right, with tremendous amount of moral authority, talking about, essentially, in my opinion, hatred of oppressed nationality people and hatred of affirmative action. You've seen hatred of LGBT people coming out of the a constitutional amendment to strike down that terrible scourge of gay marriage. You've seen a war in Iraq. You've seen potential nuclear strikes against Iran. You've seen right-wing fundamentalism sweep this country. You've seen a racism that we haven't seen since the Jim Crow and the slavery period. But you haven't seen Bobby Seale that much. You haven't seen Fred Hampton from the Black Panther Party, because Fred was murdered in his bed at 21 years old by the Chicago police. You haven't seen Malcolm X because he was murdered. You haven't seen Martin Luther King because he was murdered. These were many of my teachers. So as a white Jewish man who spent most of my life in the Black Liberation Movement, most of my life working with the Congress of Racial Equality, Students for a Democratic Society, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the Black Panther Party, who worked with the Young Lords Party, which is a Puerto Rican revolutionary group, the Red Guards, which was an Asian Pacific Islander revolutionary group, worked with the American Indian Movement, which was an indigenous revolutionary organization, worked with the League of Revolutionary Struggle, which was a Marxist revolutionary organization of people of all races. A lot of you must it must be very sad that it's not so much that I expect you to become left-wing revolutionaries or anti-racist, anti-imperialist revolutionaries, although that is my objective as an organizer, but it's very sad that you haven't even been exposed to those ideas in the so-called free marketplace of ideas. When I got involved in the civil rights movement, I was a young, white, Jewish kid. I was the first white person organized by the Congress of Racial Equality to be a field secretary. I walked in and I said, I'm here to build a movement for civil rights. And the black people with whom I worked said, the United States is a racist, imperialist empire. The United States stole Mexico, created the slave and the slave trade, killed the indigenous people. We have to build a third world movement with third world people in this country, an alliance with the people in the third world, and overthrow imperialism. I said, no, I'm here to get Democrats elected. Aren't we trying to reform the Democratic Party? The Democratic Party is a bourgeois party of segregation. Brother, don't you understand that when we go down south and the Klan is lynching us, who is the party down south? The Democratic Party. Yeah, so why do you think Bobby Kennedy will not protect us when we go down south and get beat up? Because those are Democrats down there lynching us. The Democrats are called the Dixiecrats. It's a two-party system. The Democratic Party is a white man's party. We don't want any part of it. I'm going, whoa, they didn't teach me this at Cornell. This is kind of radical. He said, but I got it. I got it quickly. And I got the story. And I've spent my whole life reading and studying. And I believe that is the master narrative. And what's important about that is you have to ask yourself, is the United States a fundamentally ethical country that carries out a little bit of racism and sexism? Or is the United States a fundamentally racist country? My interpretation is the United States is what's called a white settler state. It was created first by the Spanish, who created a genocide that's almost beyond belief if you read People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. I could take you through a history of smallpox blankets, of the Trail of Tears, of the stealing of northern Mexico. I could take you into the 20th century, where I just have a book called Overthrow. It's called America's Century of Regime Change from Hawaii to Iraq. How did the United States own Hawaii? Spanish-American War, based on a totally fraudulent, trumped-up incident, Remember the Maine, which led to the invasion of Cuba, the Philippines. How did the United States get into the Philippines? How did the United States get into Hawaii? The United States has basically been conquering land under a white Christian flag, under a view of white supremacy, subordinating and killing third world people. This is the master narrative that we have to change. You may not agree with it, but this is a master narrative that I think you have to take seriously and struggle with. Up until now, I sound like perhaps in the school of Noam Chomsky, in the school of a lot of Michael Parenti, in the school of a lot of other people who come on campuses and talk a radical critique about U.S. imperialism that some of you have heard before. What's a little different about me is that I'm primarily a grassroots organizer. What I do is build actually movements. I am actually challenged by the concept, what are you going to do about it? Because critique, absent of building an organization, after all, can be somewhat depressing. My view is if you're not in an organization, your life is meaningless. Now, let's get to what we're going to do about it. If you came to Los Angeles, the Labor Community Strategy Center is trying to build an anti-racist, anti-imperialist, anti-fascist united front. That's a theoretical construct. For some of you, it's like, ooh, I wish you wouldn't use those words. Couldn't you say a progressive, civil rightsy, challenging imperial actions or a colonized perspective that might in some way lead to a diminishment of civil rights and civil liberties in a postmodern and more complex formulation? No, I don't want to do that. because that is madness. You can't organize your mama on that. You can't organize anybody on that. That is typifying to the system. You're afraid of the system. It's talking the language of a defeated person. These are the ideas that are being driven out of the free marketplace of ideas. Why are they afraid of talking about fascism if they're not moving towards fascism? Why are they afraid to talk about racism if this country is not racist? Why are they afraid of talking about imperialism because they have 737 U.S. military bases all over the world? So if you use the discourse of revolutionary opposition to the system, you are in danger as a faculty person of losing your job. You are in danger as a public speaker in being called rhetorical and unconvincing. You are in danger of being kicked off the media. You're in danger. So there's reasons why people talk this way. They talk this way because we're already in a police state and people are starting to talk through the censors. You should know that, because if you hear yourself talking mush, understand it's part of your own intellectual suppression. You are already being suppressed. And so when I try to tell it like it is, and come out of that period of history where we did so, don't think I don't do so without an awareness of danger. I understand there's danger in talking like this, but as the Chinese say, danger and opportunity coexist in the same symbol. I have to take advantage before the vice closes over people like me to reach out to you and to expose you to ideas that I think are very good ideas in as clear and effective way as I can. We have a community rights campaign that's working in the high schools to stop the pre-prisoning of high schools. Because right now what's happening is inner city predominantly black and Latino youth are being criminalized for virtually everything. Their students are getting tickets and truancy tickets for being late to school. Truancy for going to school. That's a new one. Students are being held out for an entire period for being late, even though the bus was late, or even though they had no food at home, or even though they have some family problems. Let me tell you, I went to a white middle-class school. We cut class. I was in a gang, not a big one, you know, just a kind of suburban little one like in Diner, that movie, you know. It's an ancient history, folks. But I was in a gang. But I got to Cornell. I never saw a cop. For white folks in the middle-class community, the cop is your friend and walks you across the school. But in the black communities and Latino communities today, the police are your enemy, and the police are moving against you at virtually everything you do. Understand, when you call for more police, you should just say, after me, I want more armed people who are freaked out, emotionally unstable, to come into my house when I'm unarmed and protect me from God knows what. We do not need more police. We need the training of police. We need the psychiatric training of police. We need the disarming of police. We need a reduction number of police. I'm not a totally no police person, but a sane, healthy society dramatically reduces and controls police behavior. As the greatest threat to any of us is when LA says it only has 9,750 police. We have a slogan, we want 1,000 more buses, 1,000 less police. That's moving to 2,000 less police, because we want to decriminalize drugs and make it into a medical problem, which any decent society would do. We want to decriminalize many of the things on the books right now. We have another campaign, the Clean Air, Clean Lungs, Clean Buses campaign. We're trying to get cars off the road in LA and working on global warming issues and moving to a public transportation system. That's when we need 1,000 more buses. We have another campaign, so the other one's called the Community Rights Campaign. We have the Bus Riders Union, Sindicato de Pasajeros. Sindicato de Pasajeros. The Sindicato de Pasajeros is a mass transit organization where we send people onto the bus, organize bus riders, and we built a union of bus riders fighting for better transit in LA. We have a national school for strategic organizing. We graduated 85 people from our school. It's a six-month graduate school program. I call it today the Harvard of Revolutionary Graduate Schools, but I think it's going to change to the University of Caracas Revolutionary Graduate School, or the ANC Graduate School, African National Congress. But you know, a lot of you who are political if I could say it a nice way, can't organize your way out of a paper bag. You can't even organize a meeting, let alone a protest. You know, well, who's the chair? Well, you be the chair this time. No, you be the chair. Well, I think it should be gender dominant. No, I think it's, let's have a racial, well, is there an agenda? I think agendas are inherently dictatorial. I'm glad we don't have an agenda. Okay, so what are we going to do? Well, let's have everyone speak, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do, because we want to be participatory. We don't want any hierarchies like those other corporations. What are you going to do? I'm going to graduate school, get an MBA. I'm getting the hell out of here. This is, you know, these organizations, there is no strategy, there is no tactics, there is no training. If you wanted to go to graduate school to become a brain surgeon, you would invest 7, 10, and 12 years before you'd be allowed to operate. But people think they can just join an organization and go out and change the most dictatorial country in the world by just showing up. We don't think so. I think organizing is a skill. It's a vocation. It's not even avocation. I've done it my whole life. I still have so much room to improve. So we have a 6-month intensive training program where you teach classes. My wife, Leanne Hurst Mann, teaches classes on problems of imperialism. I teach classes on the organizer's exchange. We send you out into the field, but then you come back and you're held to accountability at how did you do? How many people did you organize? How did it go? At the monthly membership meeting of the Bus Riders Union, every organizer keeps their fingers crossed, because when the people come in, they say, how'd you get here? Because of Tammy Liu. How'd you get here? Because of Damon Azzali. How'd you get here? Because of Daniel Kim. And if you're Joan X and your name doesn't come up, you feel really bad, because you were out on the bus just as many hours, but nobody came. And you feel crestfallen and defeated. And we say, relax. One, they are very good organizers, and you probably aren't yet, but it also could be a numbers game. You don't know yet. It's your first month. Don't get discouraged. Let's do some role-playing. Figure out what you did. The second month, nobody comes. Third month, nobody comes. You got a problem. Okay? It's no longer random. Some people can organize. We have to figure out, is organizing what you really want to do? We train you on things like asking for money, which I'm going to ask you for. It's a serious thing about asking for money. A lot of people say, well, I come from a working class background. I went to Stanford. I feel very bad asking poor people for money. I say, you see that cathedral over there that the Catholic Church built? They're not afraid to ask poor people for money. Now, if we're going to build a revolution, you've got to be able to ask people for money. Cesar Chavez taught me this. He says, he'd go up to poorest of the poor, campesinos, and he'd say, $15 to join the United Farm Workers. The campesino said, hey, I'm very poor. How about $5? He said, what do you want, one-third of your liberation? Are you bargaining with me? The United Farm Workers wants $15. I don't want to go in your house and look in your refrigerator and see any beer in there. I don't want to see you going to Vegas. I don't want to see you in your house. I'm asking you for $15. If you want to join the United Farm Workers, you could do it in installments, but I need your money. That was Cesar Chavez, who you see as Gandhi-like, but he's a forceful Gandhi, and he believes the poor must pay for their own liberation. So we have to teach you to ask for money because you believe in your own organization. I spend my time right now organizing mainly young people that want to be revolutionaries, finding young people that want to go into the high schools as public school teachers, people that want to, one of my main goals is to get people to drop out of PhD programs. I think that's really essential. We have the highest rate of killing people's doctorates. Jeff Ray came to us with a PhD program from Rice, and he thought he was going to study the natives, a white guy, and he thought he was going to come and do cultural anthropology. We told him we don't want any white people studying us. We don't want anybody studying us. Do you want to come and organize? He came to organize. Kept saying he's going to go back. He's all but dissertation. That's all but dead. He's now 15 years into the organization, and he's, you know, that was his PhD. My wife, Leanne Hurst Mann, got her PhD. But we rescued her from academia. She is now the lead teacher at the National School for Strategic Organizing. She has taught the 85 graduates. She teaches classes of 6 young, primarily women, black, Latina, Asian, white, and men, 6 at a time, Problems of Imperialism, Women's Studies, Strategy and Tactics. She is very, very happy. For those of you in academia, I feel very sorry for you. I think you're among the most oppressed people in America. And besides the homeless, I feel more sorry for the homeless or for you. The homeless have no illusions. They're out in the rain. You are filled with illusion, filled with delusion, filled with perception of your own self-importance, filled with a perception of your own future in America. But if you're reading seriously, you should understand you're in a crisis. The crisis is this is not where you need to be. This is not the primary place you need to be. If you happen to be here, then your job is to use it well. If you teach at the university, your job is to bring students into, first of all, exposure to books like Overthrow, to books like Katrina's Legacy. I was organized not just by Corin Snick, but by William Appleman Williams, The Tragedy of American Diplomacy, by W.E.B. Du Bois, Black Reconstruction America. I'm not an anti-intellectual. Noam Chomsky does his organizing job well. If you're going to stay at the university, run good courses. Make sure people are exposed to good books. Challenge people for the dominant ideology. Take the risks to bring the books into the eyes of students. And then get students involved in programs. If you're a college student, enjoy your studies, but move your major. Make sure you're studying anti-imperialist studies. See? If you're going to be a medical student, start going to a medical clinic every summer, intern in South Africa, intern in low-income communities, and make sure you're not going to become a bourgeois pig, because we don't need you to be that. We need doctors, but we don't need most doctors. We don't want you to be a pimp for the drug companies. We want you to be a person that really is going to bring those skills and work in county hospital where people are waiting and dying. And you can do excellent medical work. If you're going to be a lawyer, do not become a corporate lawyer, but go work for the public defender's office at a salary you're not going to believe that you can live on, with a caseload you're not going to believe you can handle. So I'm not saying every student must leave the university. I'm not saying every student should become a grassroots organizer. I am saying everybody must make a socially committed choice to be relevant and to push the envelope of your own life. Get out of your own comfort zone and really say every day, am I making decisions to change this system? Am I making decisions to take on the Bush administration? Am I making decisions to take on Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, push them to the left? Am I having ties to the masses? You can. Am I going to get a graduate degree and go and teach in an inner city school where you desperately need it? Am I going to go into a literacy program? And am I going to become an organizer in some way? How many people would like to think about coming up to the Bus Riders Union and spending, we call Weekend Warriors, a four-day program of coming up and being trained to go out to the high schools, to go out on the buses, to maybe help us design a leaflet? As I say, maybe help us sweep the floor. We don't know what we'll need when you get there. But come up for 4 days, one or two times, and volunteer. How many people are interested in doing that? Okay. How many people think you might apply this June, especially if you're black and Latino, but it's open to everybody, to the National School for Strategic Organizing, or knows somebody who might be interested in applying? Okay, great. So as all great elected officials say in conclusion 17 times, my lasting conclusion is this. I do a little intellectual karate with the university because I think the university is both the place where I was radicalized. It is the place where Mao Zedong was radicalized. It is the place where Lenin and Fidel and Che were radicalized. It is the place where Amilcar Cabral was radicalized. So let's understand that the concept of the radical middle class of the colonized people especially, or in my case, the radical middle class of the privileged people, is a model of a certain type of revolutionary. Most of the African leaders studied abroad, were sent abroad by the colonial powers, and studied in Lisbon, studied at Oxford. They were being trained to be the new colonial governors. But they got together and said, we are going to build a revolution against imperialism. We're going to take this education and turn it on its head. It can be done. Students are essential to protesting against university policies. Students are essential to getting into the community and fighting on behalf of workers. So I'm saying that I'm not challenging your physical situation in the university. I'm challenging your psychological and ideological position in the university. I'm challenging what you're doing here, not challenging why you're here, if that's clear. So it is a question of making some changes, but it's not really asking you, most of you, to quit school, because most of you are not going to become grassroots organizers. But I am asking you to make transformative changes with your life that can make this a better country, and basically take this country away from the white settler state, take this country away from imperialism, and have an anti-racist, anti-imperialist, anti-fascist revolution. You're very needed, and thank you for inviting me.
Though the applause was genuine, the feedback that followed was mixed.
I must tell you that our students reacted very negatively to his remarks about universities, because they said, look, I come from a working class background. My parents have struggled their whole lives. I've struggled to get here. Who is Eric Mann to tell me that I shouldn't be here? Now, I don't think that's exactly what he was saying. I think he was saying undergraduate education is important, but that perhaps professional graduate education is taking you away from public service in ways that are negatives.
And there's a larger lesson here, learning to become critical thinkers.
That's the goal of undergraduate education, is to teach students to think in complex ways and to look for contradictions in people's presentation. That doesn't mean that the people speaking are hypocrites. That's not what you teach. You teach that in everyone's life and in every society there are contradictions, and we all live through those contradictions. It's not that we're being hypocritical. It's just that, you know, I can criticize elite institutions, but I teach at one, and I have for 20 years. That's one of my contradictions. I can critique UCSD for not having enough Chicano and Black students on its campus, and yet here I am, and I'm still here after 20 years. So I think if you can make them aware that all of us are immersed in social contradictions, then they start to see the complexities of arguments. Then they say, okay, I'm going to take 5% of what Eric Mann said and use it because it's useful to me. 95% is interesting, but it's not quite where I want to go. The License for Freedom folks, I'm going to say, well, they're very focused on immigrant communities. That's where I want to work, so I'll go and work with that organization, or find another one that's related more closely to my interests.
We'll see just that in the next program, where students will organize around an issue close to home, improving access to higher education for undocumented immigrants.